afternoon. It is 1:05 on Thursday, February 8th, 2018. We are starting an informal hearing, and this is the North Dakota Public Service Commission. I'm Randy Christman, Chairman of the Commission. With me today is Commissioner Brian Krosius and Commissioner Julie Fedorchak. This is the XL Energy Resource Treatment Framework case, or as we prefer to call it, and I'm sorry I have to do this, but case numbers PU-13-195, 194, 743, 742, 708, 707, 706, and PU-12-813. So that's how I prefer to refer to it.
It's very catchy.
I think so, yeah. Did either of you have any opening comments?
I don't have any opening comments, but I do have a question that I'd like to get out there kind of on the front end that isn't necessarily directly related to the RTF, which is what I like to refer to this as, discussion. But it is related to NSP as a whole, and I think it's something that's been in the news here, so I'd just like to get the company to comment on if it's okay with you, Mr. Chairman.
Should we hold that and go do the introductions?
Sure.
First and get that everything on the record.
That's a good idea.
So if you'd go around, and I think you should be in here, you kind of got to speak into the mic pretty closely, and if everyone would go around and identify themselves.
Akash Chandrana on behalf of XL Energy.
Zev Simser on behalf of XL Energy. On the phone, we have Karen Everson and Chuck Burdick as well from XL Energy.
Tell me the names again. Karen and what?
Chuck Burdick.
Okay.
Ilana Jeffcoat-Sacco, Public Service Commission Advisory Staff.
Patrick Fawn, Public Service Commission Advisory Staff.
Jerry Lynn, Advisory Staff.
Victor Shook, Public Service Commission Advocacy Staff.
Jack Hsu, Public Service Commission Advocacy Council. And I believe on the phone, at least available, we have PA Consulting as well.
And then there are several other company people in the room as well, but that I understand are not intending to speak. Okay, and if that changes, you're welcome to speak, but we'll just need to identify then. Okay, Commissioner Fedorchak, your question.
Absolutely. So the Super Bowl and XL's presence at the Super Bowl has been in the news in North Dakota a fair amount, and I've had ratepayers say, well, how is it that XL Energy is buying Super Bowl tickets and having Super Bowl events? And so I have my belief on how that happens, but I'd like to hear the company's response on that just because I think it's probably something all three of us are getting and would be good to just get an update on how the company handles those kinds of expenses.
Yep. So thanks for the question. And it's my understanding, and I appreciate it, that there is actually a lot of interest in that particular topic. Just a little bit of background. The company, XL Energy, was part of the Super Bowl host committee, along with a lot of other companies that have strong presences in the Twin Cities area, such as General Mills, Delta, Ecolab. I could go on and on in terms of who all participated in that. I think the most important question, though, is really who is paying for our presence in both on the Super Bowl host committee and then participating in buying tickets or things along those lines. And all of those expenditures that the company incurred are direct assigned to shareholders. So not a single expense dollar was intended to be recovered from ratepayers at all. So there are certain expenses. We call them below-the-line expenses, and those are expenses that we believe are not appropriate to be recovered from our customers, and those are items that are direct hits or they're direct reductions to our profits, basically. So,
and so, if a customer or a regulator wanted to see that, like on paper, where would we look?
We've had to do this in the past in Minnesota. There are inquiries as part of rate cases into our employee expenses. And as part of that, we did produce those expenses that we typically recover or seek recovery of from our customers. And those would be traditional business meals, travel expenditures, as we do have an 8-state footprint. And just even me being up here today would be a travel expense that the company would view as being appropriate to be recovered from customers. So we keep track of all of the paper associated with the expenses we incur. Mm-hmm. And then typically what happens is as we process a rate case, then we would make an adjustment for a line item like employee expenses, where we would take out those expenses that we think are inappropriate to be recovered from customers. And so there's two answers to your question. One is the actual physical paper that supports mm-hmm. each and every expense, and we have to keep those for purposes of IRS regulations, et cetera. And then likewise, there's an accounting adjustment that's typically made as part of our regulatory books or our cost of service to adjust out those types of expenses. And they can be beyond just employee expenses. They could be lobbying expenses or other things that regulators don't think are appropriate to be recovered from customers.
Okay. Thanks, Akash. Appreciate that.
Okay. With that, we'll get into what the actual informal hearing is about now. So well, there were no opening comments from the commissioners, so I think I'll just turn it over to Akash. Are you going to
give
the discussion for the company?
Yep. Again, I appreciate the time that the commission is taking with this particular proceedings, I should say, with all the different numbers. Yep.
Before you go any further, one more thing that I neglected to mention. For the record, this is an informal hearing. It involves only undisputed facts. If there are disputed facts, we'll have to wrap it up and start a formal process.
And that's a great lead-in for my comments, which is the intention that we have largely here today is to be here to answer questions that the commissioners may have to clarify what's in the record, which is not being disputed. And we've made the filing a couple of years ago now at this point, and I think that we've hit a point where, from the company's perspective, we think that it's a good time to have a conversation around how do we want to move forward with the integrated system. We've kind of hit a natural pause or inflection point in adding resources onto the system right now. And so as part of the settlement that we reached in our last rate case and subsequent settlements, we were subject to bringing forward a solution or a proposal that could possibly answer or resolve or provide a path forward on how to deal with situations where there is an agreement in terms of a particular resource that we're adding to our system and how to pay for it. And that's what the record reflects are several options and ideas that the company brought forward at a high level. And the company's proposal was or continues to be some form of separation where the North Dakota jurisdiction is separated from the integrated system. And that can be done in one of two ways. And as I explained in my testimony, it can be done either through a legal separation and the creation of a separate operating company, or it can be done, I would say, more in an informal way, which is formalized through rate making, where everything looks and feels exactly the same. There's still one operating company, but there's a segregation on the books that happens, and then a natural divergence that happens. And so we think that there's some benefits associated with accomplishing a separation of some form. And I think what we worked hard to do is to try to bring forward enough information so that a good discussion and dialogue could be generated. And that's what we've had with your staff so far. But I think both sides of the table would agree at this point, we probably need a little bit more discussion around this with your presence involved to understand if we're going down the right path or not, quite frankly. And from the company's perspective, we'd like to reach some sort of solution that we could start to implement. But we also don't want to work something out with staff and then bring that forward to the commission and feel like we went off on a tangent or went off on a side road that that catches you guys by surprise. And so I think that was the nature of what we were trying to set up here. I'm happy to go further into what we filed and talk about it more explicitly, but my general comments are focused on being really appreciative of the time that you were taking with this and looking forward to being able to answer questions and to try to clarify things. I don't know if you have anything to add.
I think we would agree with the company's stance on this being an opportune time to get together and have this discussion. There's only so far you can really go with a separated staff without any having any input from the commissioners themselves. I think from advocacy staff standpoint, what we're looking to actually achieve here today in this informal hearing, I know it's a pretty narrow scope, but we're hoping that at least when we walk out of here, the scope will be a little more narrow so that we can focus on something workable going forward. Just to reiterate kind of some stuff that's happened in the filings up to this point, they did come forward with a proposal, as everyone agreed to do, and that was the actual proposal was the legal separation. Staff did review it as in the form of advocacy staff, at least, and we were not agreeable to that position for a full legal separation, as you're well aware from reading our testimony. And maybe just to go backwards a little bit, it's advocacy staff's view that this whole proceeding began because the commission did not believe at that point in time that the company was really operating in accordance or to the public interest at the time. And this was, it's essentially the commission's attempt at trying to usher the company to operate more in accordance with the state's laws and regulations and policies at the time. And I mean, this started really 10 years ago, 07776, when that first multi-jurisdictional allocation issue happened in the 2008, I think, rate case test year. And we're a decade from that. We have a whole new commission. In fact, most of our staff is probably different here as well. So at least from advocacy staff standpoint, we're really interested in seeing how the commission intends to administer their regulation.
Questions?
I do. As we're
or comments.
Could be both. But as I continue to review the material, one question that I have in terms of it seems to center around uncertainty in terms of cost recovery for resources that have been put in place but decided on or will be put in place in the future. Is that generally speaking an accurate way of framing it up?
Yeah, I think that's fair, Commissioner. I think one of the things that we're trying to do with this particular solution or discussion or this docket in general is the fact that we have to continue to plan for our system, and there's definitely an approach in Minnesota that includes evaluating resources based upon societal costs, and that includes carbon costs, externality costs such as SOx and NOx and health benefits and things like that. And in North Dakota, the evaluation is really on a pure rates perspective, on a revenue requirement basis. And what ends up happening is you have some tension that then develops and emerges in the resource-making decisions. And so I think that as we look ahead to our system or look ahead as our system is going to change over the course of the next decade, and just to provide a little bit of perspective, by 2035-ish in that ballpark, even 2040 if you go out that far, by 2040 our three nuclear units will have hit the end of their NRC license lives, unless we seek extension of those. Our coal plants, meaning Sherco 1 and 2, and I believe 3, by the time you get to 2040 or thereabouts, will have kind of hit the end of their life or be retired or be close to that, as well as our King plant. And when you factor in all the PPAs that are kind of underneath the surface as well, You've got like close to 6,000 to 7,000 megawatts of generating capacity that's going to have to be replaced in some way, shape, or form. And so we know that we're going to have to plan for our system, and this is a conversation I had not too long ago with our South Dakota regulators as well, which is when you think about the size of the NSP system as at about a 10,000 megawatt peaking system, and you're talking about replacing 60% to 70% of that generation capacity in the course of, let's just say, 20 years, there's going to be decisions that have to be made. And we're going to have to start making some of those decisions sooner rather than later. And that doesn't mean that we have to make them all, like, tomorrow, but we do have to start making some of them. And because of that, we know that unless we can figure out what the right allocation or cost allocation solution is, that we're going to continue to bump up against this issue, which is we may make some choices for the system that are agreeable to everybody, and then we may make some choices for the system that are not agreeable to everybody. And that's going to make it really hard for us to continue to plan for the system on a whole basis.
It seems, though, that with the ADP process available,
mm-hmm.
that you have the ability to ascertain whether a resource may or may not receive cost recovery or be eligible for cost recovery. It's not a guarantee, but you have a pretty decent barometer, don't you, through that process? So what are the deficiencies, or what's the argument
right.
against that?
I mean, I think one of the things that, again, I think one difference, and I'm going to talk about differences, and please take this as I'm very agnostic. Like, I'm not trying to say one's better than the other. So just try to take it from that perspective. You know, in Minnesota, when we go through the resource planning process, and the commission there makes a decision, there's a statutory framework that says that there's a presumption of reasonableness in following the commission's order there. So if the commission says, as part of the IRP process, and this is before we've entered into a single contract discussion or I shouldn't say any contract discussions, but it's pretty close. Like, we are purely looking at this from a modeling perspective, and we've maybe done some field inquiries to understand what prices look like, but we haven't sat down with a counterparty yet and hammered out a contract. So that's happening at the very front end in Minnesota. So you get an order, and you kind of say, okay, the order tells me it's reasonable for me to go acquire X megawatts of gas, X megawatts of wind, X megawatts of solar. And then I'm going to go through a procurement process, and I'm going to go do that, and then I'll bring that back to the commission, and we'll see where we go. And there's a very high likelihood that they're going to say yes. The ADP process comes in after we've already hit and entered those contracts with those parties. And I think one of the things that we're looking for as a potential solution or something that could help is, well, what if we get engagement even further up the chain from this commission? So we could say, this is what we're thinking about. We haven't sat down at a table and even entered into a contract, let alone had a conversation with a counterparty. We haven't put steel in the ground. We haven't expended significant O&M dollars or capital dollars to even think about a capital project. We're thinking. We're planning our system. We're planning our business. What do you guys think about it? How do you feel about it? And if you're supportive of it, great. That means that we can count on that and then go forward and go try to implement that, as opposed to, one regulator said yes, and they're a significant, you know, they're the significant footprint of the NSP Minnesota system. We're going to go forward and do that. We're going to then bring forward all of these contracts and these commercial arrangements and seek your input and seek your approval for them. And in some situations, we may not get that, and we have a decision to make then. Are we going to move forward with it or not? And if we do, then we'll have to go deal with it in a rate case for cost recovery. And so I think the ADP process is helpful, but I think, again, putting it in the context of 6,000 to 7,000 megawatts of new generation capacity coming onto the system, it's not going to work as efficiently and effectively as we'll need it to work when we're talking about wholesale changes like that.
It almost makes it sound as if the ADP process is a moot point in many ways. If the commitment has already been made, or did I misunderstand how you explain that?
I would disagree that it's a moot point, because... Bless you.
Thank you.
You got one more in you?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Because all the contracts have regulatory CPs in them, and what that is a legal... It's a contractual provision that allows us to terminate the contract if we don't get favorable regulatory treatment. And where we end up with really tough decisions to make is we do our best to negotiate those contracts with long enough windows so that we can get through a regulatory process. And so if Minnesota moves, let's say, in 9 months through their regulatory process and North Dakota takes 12 months to move through their process, we may hit a period of time where we've expired the clock, so to speak, and we have to make a decision. Do we try to renegotiate that contractual provision, and what are we going to give up in renegotiating it? Do we want to waive it, in which case we won't have it to pull as a lever? Or do we want to just see what happens and work with with staff to see if we can reach a settlement that gives us enough assurances that we feel like we can move forward? There, it's not a moot point. My what I'm trying to communicate, and maybe I'm not doing the best job of doing so, is we've hit a certain inflection point by the time that we're bringing these decisions before you, and they're not comparable to the inflection point that we're at with our other commission.
Okay, well, let me try a different angle on this, or a little bit. I'm just trying to get a really good overall idea. As a result of all of this, you've had stranded costs, correct, with some of the resources that you've put in place?
That's correct.
And you anticipate, if things keep moving down the same path, you will have more stranded costs in the future?
That's correct. We'll have a certain amount of costs that are not being recovered from North Dakota customers.
6% or whatever the allocation
is? Well, it's a little bit less than that, actually. There's the way that the fuel clause currently works. There is some portion of it which is recovered from North Dakota customers, but not the entire amount.
Okay. Right.
So, it just will... Again, right now, can we work with it? Maybe. if it doesn't get worse, sure. You figure out a way to deal with it. But, my job, just being very honest, is my job is to try to get every reasonable penny that the company incurs to be recovered from its customers, so long as it meets the applicable legal standards. And when you've got a construct in one state, such as the state of Minnesota, where we feel like we're meeting those standards and we have a commission that says so, and then we're recovering those costs in that state, and then we bring it to some of our other states and there's a disagreement over that, naturally you're trying to figure out, how do I solve that problem? How do I solve that issue? Can I make different decisions? That's a natural question. Can you make a different decision? And in some situations, we can. In some situations, what we find to be the most effective and most appropriate decision to be made is maybe one that doesn't align across the board.
I'm just going to ask one more quick question, and then mm-hmm. I'll turn it over. I know Julie and Randy probably have questions, and I don't want to dominate the discussion. But maybe it's partly a statement, but it almost seems as if Minnesota, I'll make it as a statement so you don't get into trouble with another commission, is making the assumption that their mandate should be shared by other states, or there wouldn't be stranded costs.
There's parts of this where I can see your point, and then there's parts of it where I struggle just in terms of trying to find the common ground there. And one good example is, I'll just use solar, and I'll use it generically. And, we did a a bid process out in Colorado, so a sister jurisdiction, and it's publicly available information. A trade journal did an article on this, which was what were the results of that competitive bid process for solar, and they were seeing prices that were $30 and $40, which is a really good price for solar. But when you look at a couple factors, is it needed? Would a resource like that be immediately needed today on the Minnesota system? No, we have plenty of capacity length. Is that cheaper than energy prices plus a capacity adder? Well, at $40, it's pretty close, but it may not be absolutely the cheapest resource. And so, but when you think about planning, and this is maybe where I sit there and I struggle with the idea of a mandate, there's a philosophy around planning and around resource planning. One is that I'm going to be proactive and I'm going to plan for the worst today, even though I might be in a good position, because if the right opportunity comes along, I can take advantage of it. I can leverage that situation today. Another approach could be just in time. You know, when that need is ripe, that's the time at which I'm going to fill it. And that isn't a mandate-driven approach. There's no mandates associated with that. That's just a philosophy on how do you want to plan your system.
I'll take a break.
Okay. So I've been struggling with this just because the integrated system has served customers so well for so long. So it's hard to walk away from that into some new territory that is completely unproven. And so that brings me back to how do we make this? What adjustments do we need to make the existing system, which is more proven, to make it work better? And how do we get there? And I'm not sure that I've found that in the proposals, and I don't fault the company with that because you guys were asked to think of kind of all new. So I've been struggling or contemplating the IRP process and North Dakota's lack of a formal IRP process. And it seems like it's a shortcoming of our oversight. And I'm wondering if us taking a more formal approach to that might be more helpful to getting the conversations on the front end, like you talked about you have with Minnesota. The problem is, and this is just the reality, we're such a small player, it feels like Minnesota really doesn't care about what North Dakota's thoughts are on anything. And if we say no, they just kind of say, well, too bad, company, figure it out. So so the integrated resource planning would probably have, if we had a better process for that and a more formal process with an approval, that might have addressed something like the Mankato project. That probably could have been worked out through that, and we might have had a different outcome on our side. The solar mandate that was driven by that whole case was just pretty clearly, from our view, a resource that was being added to meet the mandate that was driven by Minnesota. It was higher cost, wasn't needed at the time, and so we said no, and I think we'd say no on an IRP, and that's one of those areas where I wish we could have some sort of agreement. This is like outside of the regulatory processes or just not how it all works, but just sort of a gentleman's agreement with Minnesota that if you're adding resources, if the company's adding resources to fulfill a mandate that is been passed by the Minnesota policymakers, that unless it is a low-cost resource, North Dakota's not going to pay for that. That's something that Minnesota customers are going to pay for. And that they just realize going in that, I mean, that just seems reasonable. I don't know If I was a North Dakota legislator passing laws requiring a company that works in multiple states to do something, I would expect that North Dakotans are the ones that are going to pay for that, mm-hmm. that it isn't going to be shared across the company-wide footprint. So those are that's sort of where I'm going to provide direction to staff on next steps. I'm not although there's some thought that we might save money and like initially when you start looking down the road to the transformation that you're talking about, Akash, I think there's a big question mark in how that North Dakota would fare long term by a separation.
Yeah, so a couple of layers to your question, and I'll do my best to kind of go through them piece by piece. I think the first one is, the integrated system, and does that go away with all of the solutions that we're proposing? And the answer is no. I think the value of the pseudo separation, as it's called in my testimony, is that that North Dakota stays as part of the integrated system. Yeah. And I think that's part of the reason that, again, looking at Mr. Heidel's testimony, there was a recognition that if you're going to go someplace, that one, retains the benefits of the integrated system. I think that, the legal separation approach, the upside is it provides for a pure planning construct that's, completely North Dakota driven, and again, I think from our side of it, and I will speak more for my side of it in terms of the company, which is it provides a lot of certainty. We will be planning for North Dakota on North Dakota's bases, and we'll be making decisions that will clearly be on all fours with what North Dakota policymakers and lawmakers want. That being said, I appreciate the observation, which is our footprint here is relative to the MISO market is not that big, and so there is the potential for volatility. So I think in terms of the integrated system and some of your observations of a more formal resource planning process, I do think that if it works correctly, what would happen is we could come forward to the North Dakota Commission and say, okay, we're having this conversation in parallel with Minnesota and North Dakota. You have an option. Here's what the resource pool looks like sized for the quote-unquote integrated system. If you think it's a good idea, great, we can move forward with that. If you think it's a bad idea, well, we're gonna sleeve out or carve out that piece of it that would be allocated to North Dakota and narrow the size of the resource or make this resource smaller to fit Minnesota and South Dakota, or Minnesota, South Dakota, and then maybe what Wisconsin may want or may not want. And so I think that that's the idea behind having a more formal integrated resource planning process here in North Dakota. And I think that's why in my discussions with Commissioner Crotius, it's like that's where the ADP doesn't mm-hmm. provide, doesn't hit that note, doesn't hit that chord. And so you have an option then. You actually get to say, I don't like that. That solar is mandate driven. We don't want that. And we then have, it becomes our obligation to go back and talk to the Minnesota Commission and say, okay, this is the amount of solar I have to acquire to meet the state mandate in this situation. And it's we Minnesota customers need to pay for that. And I think one of the benefits, again, speaking solely from the company's perspective, of having a decision or a resolution in this proceeding is that becomes something that I get to go back to South Dakota and Minnesota and say, we've reached a resolution on this issue. What do you guys think now? What do you like this? Do you not like this? And we can continue the discussion around that. I think that I have to bifurcate a little bit in terms of your third point, which is around the Minnesota mandates. You know, I think there are there have been times more recently and going back a ways as well, and we were just having a discussion about this last week, you know, where Minnesota lawmakers make a decision, they pass a law that says you need to go do X, and there's a trade that's involved, no different than what happens in politics in any state. And the challenge becomes then, as part of an integrated system, we then go acquire those resources and we go state to state, and we say, okay, we all have to pay for this. And, you know, when the solar mandate happened, yeah, that's exactly how the flow-through happened. And so I think that becomes frustrating for other states to sit there and go, well, wait a second, why am I paying for your trade, your horse trading that's going on in the state? I think there are, as we talk about in our testimony, there's some value that comes to all customers by going after some of these resources, but reasonable minds can differ, of course, on that. So I think in terms of the fear of we're going to lose the integrated system, I think, again, the pseudo-separation approach tries to thread that needle. And what it will do is provide an opportunity when incorporated with the integrated resource planning approach to have a say, this commission has a say on the front end of, do you want in or out of a particular resource? And if you don't, well, we then take that on and say, okay, we'll go to the other states. My hope and my goal is that I'm not venturing off into the woods at that point and crossing my fingers and figuring out what Minnesota wants, but that I already know. That's the intention behind all of this.
Alana and Pat, you guys have been working this business a long time. What are your thoughts and concerns? And Jerry, too, all three of you.
I have a question just to follow up first on that conversation. Why, if you had a more formal and more definite and appropriately timed IRP process, why do you need the pseudo-separation?
I think the pseudo-separation does a couple things. One is it actually locks in the rate-making side of all of this, which is pretty, I think it's probably the most, it goes hand in glove with being the two most important elements of this. I mean, we do need to actually lock in that side of it. There, and the rate-making component of it is, I think, equally important for the company in terms of going back to its other states as well and being able to show this is the way that costs are going to be allocated on a going-forward basis. And so to gain agreement around that.
But why do you need that early lock-in of the rate-making? That's my question. That's the heart of my question.
You know, currently the rate making works where there is a presumption that each and every resource is added to the system, and then system costs are totalized and allocated across the system. What we really need from a rate making perspective is the ability to not totalize the system costs and allocate, because that's where costs get stranded. What we're really trying to do is to say, we proposed 100 megawatts of solar. We brought it to the North Dakota IRP process that was not consistent with North Dakota's ideas. So we're going to now do 95 megawatts of solar. We need to have the rate making to ensure that that 95 megawatts of solar can get carved out from the total system costs and allocated back to Minnesota. Because it's not only payment for the cost of the solar that needs to get sort of segregated, but it's also all the revenues that come in with the solar, all the sort of ancillary issues that come in with MISO. So the idea here is that if you do the resource plan up front, we continue to assume everything is integrated, where the resource plan process in North Dakota would come through and it would be, well, you proposed 100 megawatts of solar. That's not what we want. That 95 megawatts of solar, the idea would be to pseudo not only allocate the costs, but the capacity, the energy, the benefits, and all the other portions only to those states that want to participate. By having the resource plan, we can size the resources appropriately. By having the rate making in place, we can make sure that the dollars in and out flow to the appropriate place.
Another way to say it, and I don't know if you'd agree completely with this, but another way to say it is otherwise you'd end up with a resource plan process that's actually mini rate case as well. And I don't think we want to go down, I don't think the company wants to go down that path.
Well, let's see if there's some follow-up. I still have questions, but maybe they'll get answered.
Okay, hold on a second. I want to clarify, Commissioner, were you done with your questions and turning over to staff, or were you asking them to follow up on your previous question?
Well, Alana kind of did. That's
okay. Mm-hmm. Well, then before we go to staff, I want to ask my questions. Okay. In your very original application from 2 years ago, you acknowledged that because of the small footprint we have, that North Dakota customers would potentially have more risk. Are you still comfortable with that acknowledgement?
In the separate operating company approach, that's a true statement. I still believe that.
Okay. So dividing things up, whether it's a real formal separation or a less formal separation, any kind of division of the integrated company, isn't that kind of going the opposite direction of what we've seen in the utility industry in recent years and decades? And I'm thinking, for example, primarily FERC starting the RTOs to, instead of just previous kind of informal agreements between companies to with their transmission, to go into these more formal organizations, spread the risk around, and now we're talking about an already integrated company in several states, and now kind of trying to divide them up. It seems like it's backwards of what the industry is going.
So I think in terms of a full legal separation where you have a separate operating company, yeah, I mean, I think that that's what you're seeing is a lot of consolidation in the utility industry where you've got utilities merging with one another, or and there's some activity on that front. And then likewise, there's definitely, you know, the creation of regional markets to help, you know, spread out the risk, so to speak. Again, I think with the pseudo separation solution, the idea there is actually that the North Dakota footprint doesn't lose any aspect of being part of the operating company. You're still part of the operating company of NSP Minnesota. The best way to think about it is just you've got different rate making and cost allocations that are happening on our regulatory books is what's happening. And so the same buying power, the same, you know, security that comes with being part of the integrated system and a large company in the integrated system is retained. And that's one of the reasons why I think as we were developing these solutions, we wanted to bring that one forward, because it's really a matter of allocating costs. And then I think the other piece of it is, as Zev was explaining, is there's a say, there's an option, there's a front-ended option on, do you want to participate in that resource or not? And I think that that's kind of the benefit for us, is that we know where this commission stands, and the rate making and the planning process all work together so that we're minimizing the stranded costs that come out of moving forward with a decision that, you know, Minnesota likes and Minnesota approves, but one that you don't. So if we want to do 100 megawatts of solar, and we know on the front end that that's not a resource you want us to go pursue for X, Y, and Z reasons per North Dakota law, we can say, great, we're going to do 95 megawatts of that resource, and you'll never see any of the costs or the benefits associated with that resource.
Won't a pseudo-separation as opposed to a complete legal separation, won't the success of it still rely on fair and reasonable decision-making in the future? It would seem to me that the big kid on the block is going to have an advantage in all the decision-making going forward, really just the same as it is now.
I actually don't think so. again, I think what ultimately happens with the pseudo-separation approach is that at some juncture way down the road, we will be planning for North Dakota, and so North Dakota will be planned for for its own capacity needs, for its own requirements. It will be delivered forward as an integrated solution, but we will eventually hit a point where there's some distinction there. I think, you know, when I hear things like, is Minnesota going to still kind of drive everything? I think if there's a perception that Minnesota is driving something, that's where North Dakota gets to say, I don't like the path that you're going on. And the real, I view it, the real risk and the reason why legal separation was something that we really favored or, you know, and brought forward is this commission can change. The Minnesota Commission will change, and the South Dakota Commission will eventually change. And so as decision makers change over the course of time, the rate making that supports some of this, the pseudo-separation can change too. With a fully separated operating company, that's the benefit for the company. It's a fully separated set of books. It's fully separated in terms of planning. It's fully separated on multiple layers. But in terms of the big kid still driving the decision-making, the big kid's going to drive the decision-making for the big kid. They're going to be able to say, we don't like your plan here, here, and here. We want this, this, and this. And we'll say, great, that means Minnesota customers are paying for this, this, and this because North Dakota has opted out of this particular situation.
But in a case like this where your North Dakota customer base is not real large in utility references for building generation and things like that, are they ever going to have the ability to benefit from anything of large scale if it's going in a different direction than the rest of the company?
Yeah, what? Sorry, I think I got this one. I think the answer, I know the answer is yes. I mean, at some point, we will have a need for capacity, and that's going to emerge. And once that does, we will fill that capacity in a way that makes the most sense for our customers, and at the same time, we will do so in a fashion that is consistent with the laws and the standards that exist in all the states that we serve.
So I recognize that in the current situation, the company gets into uncomfortable situations with one state wanting to do one thing and another state wanting to do another thing. But outside of these two options of a pseudo-separation or a complete legal separation, do you have other options available to you in trying to balance these things?
The options are that we continue to do the same thing and we try to do better, might be a better way to put it, I guess, or a way to put it, which is try to make a better case. Change our behavior is probably another one, but I do think that in terms of what are tangible solutions that can be implemented, these are the two that immediately rise to the surface. And as staff pointed out, this has been a docket or a set of proceedings that's been kicking around for close to a decade. So we've had a lot of people thinking about what are some different options for how to solve these problems. And, the company is not in the business of wanting to shrink the size of the company. So it's not sitting there and looking at, just sell these assets off and that'll just take care of the problem. That's not the posture of the company. And so the options that we're looking at are ones that we have seen be implemented in other parts of the country that we have implemented ourselves and we think that we can accomplish. And so those are the types of things that we looked at.
Is it fair to say that almost all of the problem that this is meant to address has to do with generation choices?
I don't know if I'm not sure is probably the best way to put it, because, you know, I follow the industry trends quite a bit, and I follow what's going on in some other states, primarily in New York and California, and a lot of the chirping that's happening out there just generally in the winds. And, you know, I think a lot of states are starting to move into a place where portfolios are blending and bleeding together, quite frankly. There isn't the segregation of what's a generation portfolio, what's a transmission, what's a distribution portfolio, what's demand side. Everything is just kind of falling into one bucket. And I the reason why I pause is that if I have a state that wants to be hyper aggressive on a hypothetical state that wants to be hyper aggressive on distribution investments that promote a lot of demand side resources and that promote a certain amount of supply side resources, I think that there's three question marks there. There totally are. And so it's not as narrow as just, is it a generation or production issue? It could be, well, I'm not sure I necessarily agree with the distribution investments that come with that. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with the pricing options that come with that. And so I think that it's going to get more complicated is probably the best way to put it, because I think a lot of these pieces are going to start to compact upon themselves, if that makes any sense.
It does. And, you know, demand-side management, I guess, and maybe it's not right for me to do this, I kind of in my mind lump that in with transmission a lot, because we typically do it to avoid the added costs of more transmission. And so I was kind of meaning for that to be part of the same grouping there. But when these disputes involve generation, is it even a possibility within rate-making confines to, if one state is demanding something for not only the added electric generation, but also to achieve some other goal that they have that adds costs, that do the other jurisdictions just have the choices between yes or no? Or is there a third choice of yes to the extent it's low cost, but then the excess that is being added to the cost for that jurisdiction's desired other outcomes is on them? Can these things not be divided?
From the regulator's perspective, yeah, yes. I think that you can say, yes, this is acceptable to this limit and then no more than that. And then the company has a decision to make, which is, well, what do I do in this situation? And which I think brings us to where we sit today, which is that there have been a series of decisions that have been made in Minnesota, and the company has brought forward some of those decisions, and some of those decisions have been ones that we've advocated for. Some have been ones that we have not advocated for. Some have been made through lawmaking. Some have been made through regulatory making. But they've been made. And as a result of that, there are costs that have to be recovered. And through the series of decisions made by either a North Dakota commission, a South Dakota commission, or settlements that we've agreed to one way or the other, there is an amount that we're not recovering. And we have tried to bring that back to Minnesota and say, hey, you got to pay for this. And the answer has, in the time that we did bring it back, was no, we're not going to pay for this. And that, to me, was, and I sat and advocated for Minnesota to pay for it. I sat in front of the Minnesota Commission and worked really hard to get them to pay for it. And that was a signal to me that we have to come up with a way that there's a lot more, there's more transparency, is probably the best way to put it, around this is our plan, this is what we're thinking about. Can we have a discussion around whether there's an agreement around that or not? And with that comes, at least through the pseudo-separation, the rate-making adjustments that allow for the company to make decisions that are tailored for our different states without creating this leakage.
Well, and I want to be clear the kind of costs that I'm talking about here. I'm not talking about the nominal necessary cost of producing a unit of electricity, but what one jurisdiction might, in a particular case, be deeming to be excessive, okay? So if one jurisdiction says, you do this, and it's very high cost, the other jurisdiction says, we'll pay the reasonable part of that, the other, we're not. So now that you've been turned down there, you go to the one who demanded it, they say, well, we're not paying the extra either. It's theirs. Is that just the end of the line for the company? Is there anything else you can do to try and recover that?
We're actually going through this in South Dakota, and the answer is there's nothing left to be done. And again, the South Dakota proceeding, we reached a settlement in regards to at some point, you're going to have to kick me if I can't talk about this. But around the Aurora Solar Project, which was, again, a project that the company advocated against, the Minnesota Commission decided to move forward with it, or ordered us to move forward with it, is probably the better way to put it. And this commission declined to pay for the PPA costs associated with that. We were able to, because of the timing in that situation at least, we were able to work out a commercial arrangement with the developer that allowed us to recover the difference between the costs that were allowed and disallowed. But that transaction just made its way to the South Dakota Commission.
Would it not be presumed that, so you've got a multi-state company operating in good faith, that's separate regulating jurisdictions are denying your recovery. Somebody must be acting unreasonably there. And so are you not excluding a step that you can appeal those decisions to a court to see if either the utility regulators who are denying that recovery are acting unreasonable, or the ones who are demanding the additional costs are acting unreasonable? Isn't that a step that's been completely unexplored?
I would not agree that it's been completely unexplored. I think, you know, again, this is every business.
But I'll say not unexplored, but has not been pursued.
Well, and again, I'll still disagree, mainly because as a business, you do go through an assessment of litigation risk. And by that, I mean you don't simply say, I got a bad decision here, I'm going to go appeal it. You do have to take in a couple of different steps. One is, what's the likelihood of success if I'm going to go appeal it? I have to go expend time and resources to go take that decision before an appellate body and perhaps to the Supreme Court of the state that I'm making that decision in. Additionally, you're going to look at the context in which you're making a decision on, I'm going to go tell my commission I disagree with you to the extent that I'm going to take you to court. And if there are other things that are in play, you're going to weigh that, and you're going to factor that into, as a business, at least for us, we're going to weigh that into consideration. And in situations where we've felt pretty strongly about, you know, the decision that a commission has made, those are the steps that we undertake. We undertake, do we feel strongly enough about it that we're going to take it forward? What do we think the likelihood of success is? And what opportunity costs or intangible costs are we going to incur as a result of doing this? It's an assessment that we made at the time that we've had some bad decisions come out of our the Minnesota Commission. And so I, again, view it as it's thought about. It's definitely thought about. But we balance that against a really simple thing will be, are we filing a rate case? Do we want to file for an appeal on a decision that had some visibility, either locally, nationally, regionally, and then turn around and file for a rate increase and have our regulators be thinking about those two pieces? Because I think some regulators do think about that. So we'll weigh that in, and I will tell you that the standard of review in at least the state of Minnesota has a pretty high deference to the administrative body. So we're gonna weigh that.
Okay. I don't have any other questions, Commissioner Crashes.
I'll admit, based on and those comments, I'm really perplexed that another state's legislative body can issue a mandate on resource type, and then that state's same commission will not accept the full cost of those resources and expect that other states should simply pick that up, which is where we arrive at the conversation on you know, you're requesting separation, legal separation, pseudo-separation. But I don't, and to dovetail on Commissioner Christman's comments, I just do not see a single efficiency that is of any type of benefit to North Dakota ratepayers through this approach. And from my own personal experience in the business sector, breaking a larger network apart into smaller components, both from experience and from an economic standpoint, does not seem to create efficiencies. It creates another layer of administrative costs. You have to go through the process of keeping separate books. It takes more time, and you might argue fairly that, well, a lot of this is already taking place. For example, when I look at your earnings report, which I believe just came out yesterday, if 1.148 billion, I think, in profit for 2017. It's a pretty big number. And then I look at the breakdown for Wisconsin, NSP Wisconsin. I don't think that's the correct name, but you have a separate set of books.
For it's a separate them. Operating company altogether.
Right.
Yep.
And I go through these things. It just goes in the opposite direction, and then I ask, well, and I know what's driving it, but again, it's another legislative body that has decided, which is within their right on how they want to manage within their state, but that it doesn't ripple out to other components. So can you tell me why or how separation would result in or be beneficial from a cost standpoint?
Yeah, and I think one of the things I want to stress really, really vigorously here is pseudo-separation is not a form of separation that deprives North Dakota customers of the benefits of being part of the NSP Minnesota operating company.
Okay.
And I think that's a really important piece to understand, because when I hear things like the inefficiencies and, you know, kind of becoming smaller and things like that, what I think that those are very fair concerns, and we can debate those and have a great discussion around those as it comes to what is the business rationale and the cost benefit analysis that would support creating a separate operating company.
Fair enough.
Yep. And, you know, and with NSP Wisconsin, you know, there's some legal requirements that require a separate operating company. They have to be a separate standalone legal entity in Wisconsin. But in terms of separation and really what are the benefits and what are the costs associated with separation for North Dakota customers. I think that from the legal separation perspective, I think we went through in my testimony and others to try to detail those. And I think that when you raise concerns over inefficiencies, and Commissioner Christman talked about this, the chair talked about this, about is it risky? And we tried to articulate, yeah, it's gonna be risky. It's a 500 megawatt system in a sea of, you know, MISO system that's well over, I don't know, 50,000 megawatts or something like that. I mean, you're a small system in a big pond. You're gonna feel a lot of fluctuation in that situation. With pseudo separation, the benefits are really that North Dakota customers, through the guidance of this body, are going to be served and pay for resources that reflect the laws and the policies of the state of North Dakota. That's the benefit. And to me, that is actually one of the reasons why, you know, as we continue to think about more and more changes that are going to happen on the system, that there's some value associated with it.
Seems like you still have the same challenge, though. And you had mentioned, I think both of you had mentioned, that, well, instead of 100 megawatts, for example, of solar, we would build 95, or you would build 95. But then isn't the 95 the number that you're trying to... I don't understand how you would get 100% recovery by reducing that number to 95. Wouldn't sure. It be 95 of 95 at that point, and then 82.5?
Nope. So the idea behind this is that when we plan for the system, we plan for what is the capacity need for the entire system, which includes Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, theoretically even the Wisconsin system as well. We plan for the NSP system, the five-state system. And as part of that, we would come forward and say, our analysis is showing us that we need 100 megawatts to serve the system. And then the question becomes, well, do you need it? Is that all needed? Is it cost effective? Does it meet the different requirements of all the different states? I'm going to play this hypothetical example out. The North Dakota Commission could say, I don't need it. You haven't proved to me that I need my share of that 100 megawatts. And in that situation, we would say, okay, you're right, we haven't. So instead of pursuing 100 megawatts, we would take 5 megawatts off, which is 5%, which represents our North Dakota share, and the 95 megawatts would be the megawatts that we would go pursue and see cost recovery only from Minnesota, South Dakota, and NSPW through the interchange agreement. North Dakota is not going to pay for their share or a share of the 95 megawatts. Likewise, North Dakota is not going to get any potential benefits associated with their share of that particular resource. That's the trade. And so, again, you're not going to end up in a situation where you're paying 5% of now 95. Likewise, you're not going to get 5% of the revenues associated with the 95 megawatts, because, again, these resources, there are revenues associated with them and there's costs associated with them, and that's the trade-off. And I think that's one of the things that we've had these discussions between staff, either through paper or through conversations. That's the benefit that flows to North Dakota, in the sense that if this commission says that resource type doesn't meet the standards and the legal requirements of the state of North Dakota, you're not going to pay for it. You're also not going to see the benefits of it.
Yeah. Can I follow up?
I just want to clarify. I think I gave the wrong number on the 95 of 95. I think it'd be more like 90.25%. So my apologies. That wasn't right.
So. Commissioner Fedorchak?
On that same line, what was the Minnesota mandate on solar? What did they say that you had to do?
It was 1.5% of retail sales had to be solar by 2020 and 10% aspirational by 2030.
And was it just Minnesota retail sales?
Yes.
Okay, so in that scenario, you could do what you just said. I was concerned that there some of their mandates covered this sort of your system wide, or but if they're all targeted towards like Minnesota soda sales or generation or you know capacity or whatever, you wouldn't be able to segregate it that way. So does the pseudo separation? Obviously, all the states would have to agree to that.
Right.
It's saying this is how we're going to operate moving forward, because it wouldn't do any good if North Dakota was the only one that said we'd operate that way. Then Minnesota could still just say, well, sorry, we're not going to accept those costs, and you haven't gained anything.
Correct.
So are these conversations occurring in Minnesota and South Dakota, or are you kind of figuring out, since we sort of drove this, that what works here, and then sort of say, okay, well, North Dakota's on board with this, now we'll take this to the other jurisdictions?
The conversations are happening in all three states.
Okay.
So in South Dakota, we just recently made a filing. They had investigated our fuel clause, and they wanted to look into some of the contracts that were flowing through the fuel clause, much like the disputed resources that we talk about in my testimony and in staff's testimony. So they were interested in some of the solar that was coming through and some of the same resources. And as part of our most recent filing that we made in South Dakota, we introduced the concept of a resource treatment framework there as well. And we've had informal discussions with staff, and again, it's the same concept. It's mm-hmm. these same ideas that we're bringing forward there. Likewise, in Minnesota, the commission there had initiated a docket and a proceeding to talk about this very issue, and they wanted to make sure that there was a cross, that everything we're filing here gets filed there, and everything we're filing everywhere else gets filed there, that culminated into a discussion before the Minnesota Commission about whether or not that proceeding should continue with more and more comments. And the decision was made by the commission to no longer take comments for a period of time. That being said, I was just at an informal hearing on Tuesday, or a planning meeting on Tuesday in the Minnesota Commission, where commission staff came up to me and indicated that they're re-engaging with the RTF and would actually like to sit down and talk about this hearing. They wanted an update on how this was going and to have further discussions on what we're trying to accomplish.
So I'm looking at the company's application where you describe basically, really simplified, while we currently manage resources on a system-wide aggregated basis, pseudo-separation would require a unit-specific management approach. So you would make an agreement on the past existing resources. You'd have to go one by one by one by one. How are we going to allocate these, right? On all the generation that exists today and then moving forward? Are you just talking moving forward?
Our proposal is there, except for a very small slice of the existing system, we would continue to serve all of the states and all of our customers with that existing system, except for essentially the small slice of the system that has been disapproved or disallowed here in North Dakota. I don't think it's anybody's intent to change what has been working for many, many years, what all customers have paid into. It's really on a forward-looking basis that those changes that are being proposed to be made would take effect, and so it would be the next unit of whatever that would really be captured by this rate making.
Okay, so I'm just also in the application. The separation occurs at the resource selection and cost allocation level, meaning that once there's agreement on resolution of past resources, pseudo separation could be implemented in our next rate case following the end of this proceeding. So is that consistent with what you just said, Zev?
Yeah.
But what's this, once there's agreement on resolution of past resources, the disputed stuff? Okay. All right. I got it.
Technical disputed stuff.
Is this happening elsewhere? You mentioned some reference to other states, other places. Do you know of this type of, an approach being used successfully elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, the one that we can build upon just directly is our New Mexico and Texas footprint. We have something very similar that occurs down there. The if you talk to the president of that operating company or my counterpart down there, they would maybe question how successful it's been, but that's more of a joke than anything else. But it's that's one immediate example that we can point to. There's other examples, and we see that where you've got larger utilities that cross that serve many, many different states, where they have to figure out, okay, well, how am I going to deal with this particular issue? I think the one that we cited too in Starkweather's testimony was related to Entergy.
Yes. So Entergy had a similar issue where they chose to separate Texas and Louisiana because the states couldn't agree on some fundamental issues. And so their solution was separate operating companies. But it's ultimately the same essential outcome where, like Akash said, through pseudo-separation, you're staying within the same operating company, so you get all those benefits of staying there, like more revenues and a lower cost of debt. It's also, and that concept is also analogous to the gas industry, where you have the same gas company serving different customers. They have some mains in common, so those are allocated to all customers. But because they're on the east side of they serve the east and west side of the state. There's another gas pipeline on the east side, so only those customers on the east side pay for that pipeline. Mm. And same on the customers on the west side. And so that happens. It happens in other states in the northwest, where they're out when they've merged together, and then they're allocating different costs of different facilities across the Pacific Corps, as an example.
So I'm looking at the Burdick Direct, and I think you said Chuck was on the phone. This is from August, but it was updated cost impacts, basically, of the updated with 2017 revenue requirements and some of the newer resources you're proposing to add. And this, if I'm reading it correctly, you're estimating that the pseudo-separation could save North Dakotans 3.2%. It's on 29 of Burdick Direct, Zev. And I'm curious, how is that the first year? Is there, how long into the future does that look?
Zev, do you want me to answer that?
Well, Chuck, correct me if I'm wrong. Just if I'm reading this correctly, a lot of this also has to do with the resolution of the disputed resources. So it's a sort of a total package.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my understanding that this really relates to what we had assumed was the first year of implementation, so 2020.
Okay.
And then the way the disputed resources were structured, almost all of the savings were immediate to North Dakota because we're recovering a lot of those costs today and we'd be pushing them out. Mm-hmm. When you compare pseudo-separation to legal separation had a series of costs to implement.
Sure.
Whereas pseudo-separation, those costs were much, much smaller as estimated in Chuck's testimony.
And all of those costs and savings would be realized the first year?
This represents the first year of implementation, yes.
Is it fair to assume that those costs would carry forward, like because the resources aren't in there and they're being filled by a lower cost resource, those would be permanent savings, though?
Yes.
Okay.
I might state it a little differently. We looked at 2020 as one example year, and so the proportions would evolve over time. They wouldn't necessarily be at this level state.
So can you explain that a little further, Chuck?
Sure. So as Akash and Zev were describing, the resources allocated to each component, each participating state in the pseudo-separated system would evolve over time. And so you wouldn't necessarily, you know, we're looking at 2020 as one point in time where we don't necessarily have a lot of new resources being added, but as the, you know, 6 or 7 gigawatts that Akash was talking about over the subsequent 10 to 20 years get added, and they may be allocated in different ways to the participating states, then the proportion of cost would evolve over time. It wouldn't stay at that constant level in that 2020
right.
table all the
okay.
out over the next 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, I guess that I understand and see what you're saying now. But as far as how the past resources are determined and the impacts of those would be set. And those would be saving.
Would
yeah.
be about $7 million less.
Lower, yeah. Okay. And then going forward, we would be looking at the costs, the impacts of each resource as it comes on and evaluating those individually and coming to resolution with you all on whether North Dakota is in or not.
That's the concept.
That's the concept.
That's the concept. So what are the downsides of this? And I don't know if you wanted to follow up or if staff can jump in now yet.
Well, I think we're going to take about a 10-minute break. And then we'll come back with kind of more of that wrap-up thing, but first some questions from staff if they have some. So that clock is a little bit fast, I think, but we'll return. It's actually 2:26. We'll return at 2:36. Okay, we are back in our informal session. I do not have any more questions at this moment. Do either of the other commissioners?
No, I'm...
Well, I had asked what the downsides are of the pseudo-separation. So,
okay.
If anyone can talk about that.
I'm assuming that the company doesn't see a lot of downsides.
We don't.
Okay, so... Advocacy?
It depends, I guess, is the short answer. I mean, pseudo-separation is just a idea, and it can work lots of different ways. So I guess rather than an answer to a question, I would also like to pose a question. What do you want to accomplish from this proceeding? So we know the company is preferring legal separation because it gets them. It's the best way to solve their cost recovery issue. I know what our preferred method is because I know what our preference is on the long-term solution. What do you want to see is the question I would like to have answered.
I think we might get into that more as we wrap things up, but for now, we ask questions and answer.
Well, I know that's...
yeah.
That's part of being a
Victor, answer the question.
So, you know, we'll come to that, but...
Sure, later. Sure. So, I guess, and to kind of frame it up just a little bit, to put a finer point on it, what are you looking, you know, so what in traditional rate making isn't working from your point of view? So we've heard from the company that cost recovery isn't working for them, or 100% cost recovery isn't working for them. From my perspective, otherwise, it works all right for us. I mean, our North Dakota customers have power for the most part. You know, outside of some storms or some problems with a few minor facilities, we don't have service issues. We're primarily talking about rates and, you know, along with that can come some resource decisions.
Do you see, though, some downsides that neither the pseudo or the complete, but I think we're mainly talking at this mm-hmm. point about the pseudo separation, where you think it would, in fact, be a negative for North Dakota's consumers?
Sure. So certainly illegal. You know, I would agree. I don't think I consider that a reasonable option. The pseudo, it kind of depends on how it's structured. You know, there are some risks in there. You know, like the company keeps trying to sell us on, you know, some of these resources if we just get on board, you know, down the road. we know what the cost is going to be. It's a high cost, but we know what it's going to be, and we don't know what the market's going to be doing down the road. So there's that risk in there.
What risk? I don't understand that. Because if we don't like it, if it's too high cost, we say no.
It's too high cost now, but it may not be high cost in the future if market prices of energy go extremely high in another 15 years. It may turn out that...
Okay, you don't like locking in at one stage and being stuck with that forever for the life of the resource.
It's not that I don't like that. It's that I don't think...
Risk.
I'm okay with the risk of not locking in, is what I'm saying. The company...
Right, but on a pseudo-separation, you lock in on the front end, you evaluate it on one date, in time, mm-hmm. and you commit to whether you're in or out on that resource, and you're locked in forever. And that's the risk that you are saying is not...
No, I'm okay with that. So on pseudo-separation, so the historical integrated system locking in on some version of that, I'm okay with
it. No, I'm talking about new resources.
New resources? That is part of the risk of utilities. That's...
Commissioner Fedorchuk, I think what I would see is the risk is, again, let's use an example. Say solar, we lock in at 70, and we bring it forward at $70, and the North Dakota Commission says, no, we don't want that, but market prices go above 70 in the future. Well, you've passed on it.
Right, that's what I'm saying. So you've locked in on day one, and down the road, it's right. not, it looks better, but you can't go back and revisit that because you've declined that resource. So that's one of the downsides that you see.
And you chose to lock in at 70, and that's where it becomes unacceptable.
We can, for example.
It doesn't have to be solar.
Well, I think that's right. For example, we've had a lot of discussions here about need plus lease cost, and that paradigm, and there's been discussions of resources that were quote unquote not needed
mm-hmm.
up here. Well, if you don't approve that resource, right, we would structure it so that that resource wouldn't serve North Dakota customers.
Mm-hmm.
When that need would arise at some point in the future, the market will be what the market will mm-hmm. be, and so therefore that's the pricing because those would be the resources
right.
available.
Mm-hmm.
And I think another risk probably with the pseudo-separation is the possibility if we go down the road, it depends on how things separate out and how additional resources need to be added between capacity and energy. Again, that would be due heavily to the market exposure of things going up, but also with the pseudo-separation of a small state or small percentage of our state of North Dakota, the ability to create our own generation to... I guess, bridge a gap or to address a capacity need would be extremely expensive. And we would be putting ourselves at probably more of a risk with regards to that.
I think from our view, you would have some more market exposure
mm-hmm.
than you currently do. The NSP system is sufficiently large that almost every need is met with an actual physical resource.
Sure.
But you have lots of utilities in this state who... source tremendous amounts of both energy and capacity from the market. The commission has found that to be prudent in the past up to certain levels. And we think that at the levels where the commission has found that to be imprudent, certainly the North Dakota customers alone could support their own unit at those levels.
So it could, yeah, if you think about let's say North Dakota has a 10 megawatt need, the rest of the NSP system has no need. Where do we get 10 megawatts? Either we buy it on the market, just that capacity for a few years until they're doing another resource that happens to meet up with our time and also meets up with our ideals. You know, they may find their needs should be met with solar in the future for capacity, where we may want a combustion turbine or something along those lines.
They'd still be serving us and having these conversations with us on an integrated resource planning model.
Yep.
That we would be saying, we don't want solar, we want something more affordable than that, so let's find a better mix. And so we'd be having those planning conversations, I'm assuming, under this construct.
Yes, we would.
And it wouldn't be like, okay, go figure out what you're going to do to figure, you know, fill the 10 megawatts. That's, the company is still
right.
obligated to serve and find those solutions here.
Right. But the solution may be, as an example, a two very expensive RICE units.
Sure.
Similar to what another company did in just outside of North Dakota recently.
I think from our standpoint right now, though, all the filings just came in, the legal separation, and everything has been geared towards the legal separation. And our point, our stance this whole time has been absolutely not for legal separation. We haven't really explored the other options. It's not that we're opposed to pseudo-separation. We just started talking about that mostly within the last month and a half and the merits of that and the possible risks. Of course, as it makes sense, the company is looking for full cost recovery and jurisdictional alignment, those all important things to them. To advocacy staff, that's not something we're as concerned about. We understand that that's a major benefit to the company, and we understand why they would be striving for that. But when it comes to our role, we're put in the position of looking at what's in the public interest for the ratepayers in North Dakota. And it actually has less to do with generational additions to the. It has more to do with, is it safe? Is it reliable? Is it according to our law, least cost planning? And at that point, we're just looking, can we create just and reasonable rates for the company under our current regulatory structure?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have been. I think we can. I'm not saying that things couldn't be better, though, too. These are all things that we could discuss going forward, probably if we change the focus from what we've been focusing on. Then at that point, we could discuss other options. I know, at least if you read through our testimony, which the company disagrees with, we lay out a number of options such as proxy pricing,
mm-hmm.
which is currently happening through our ADP process. When you guys do not approve ADP, it currently falls back to, I think it's the modified average system costs, which, of course, are not getting capacity value for that, is my understanding. But, however, I mean, there is some sort of proxy pricing in the meantime. And so that's something that we'd still be interested in at least looking into if we're looking at changing what we're doing right now. As well as there are a bunch of other things that have been tossed in the past, including the zonal pricing you said, along with that natural gas. Let's see what else. I know our consultant tossed out the concept of Minnesota doing a pseudo-separation as opposed to us doing a pseudo-separation from the system. Now, that's way above and beyond what we're looking at. From this whole process, we have not been looking at Minnesota at all. We just recognize they're a sovereign state out there, and we're looking at the rates within our borders and how is this company actually serving our ratepayers within our borders. And so I guess going forward, we wouldn't mind having some direction, and I'm not asking for an hour asking a question, but which area would you like us to look more into from where we are?
So, Jack, just to follow up on some of your comments, do we have a time you aim to be done? Because we scheduled this till 4, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm not okay. in a big hurry, but I just want to keep things moving along. And just to be clear, I expect to offer some feedback here at the end, but I want to make sure staff and everyone has asked questions of everyone else first. I'm still determining what my response is going to be.
What do you see from advocacy as the risks or benefits of the company getting full cost recovery or not? Like them having stranded assets. I mean, are there risks that you are concerned about longer term if this divide grows and we say, no, can't charge North Dakota and they can't get Minnesota pick up? Are there risks that we should be concerned about?
I think currently that's not something we're overly concerned about. I know there's a lot of discussion about disputed resources. And from an advocacy staff's viewpoint, there haven't been that many disputes that we haven't resolved. I mean, we brought forth a biomass settlement. We brought forth a 1550 wind settlement. The restack agreement, we were able to take care of all the past resources that were in dispute at that point in time. I mean, there are some lingering generational resource additions that have gone through ADPs, but there aren't that many
mm-hmm.
that we're really haggling about right now that we wouldn't address in a normal rate case.
And what do you feel about the more formal integrated resource planning?
I think that that's, if you would ask us if that would be a good approach, I think that would be a principle that we would be very interested in going forward with. And it doesn't have to be necessarily an actual formal action, but we do think an integrated resource plan would be a good idea, and more than what we're doing. They're currently already providing us the North Dakota plan. It's in there. We can see it. The only thing is they come in and we don't really provide them feedback. I mean, we provide them verbal feedback, but three different commissioners speaking separately doesn't speak for a commission recommendation as a whole. So an actual formal recommendation back, I think, would be beneficial to everybody.
Well, in order to get us to actually do it, I think we have to have something formal required. Otherwise, it just doesn't rise to the level with a small staff of something that takes resources and time. You know, I think we just would have to have something more formal.
And I also think deliverable. It'd be beneficial. Sorry, Commissioner.
Go ahead.
I also think it'd be beneficial, and I know Zev and I have had this conversation in the past about the different energy policy views, and the need plus lease cost is something we discussed about recently, how that's not something I subscribe to as a policy of the commission. And, of course, I'm not the commission. And so that's something I'm putting out there. That's my thought. That's my argument. But that would be something that I'd be very interested in integrated resource process to hear how the commission wants to address these type of policy decisions.
One thing, so you spent a very limited amount of time, you said, on the pseudo-separation scenario.
I wouldn't say that we spent a limited amount of time. We did spend a decent amount of time on it, but really our main focus was geared towards the actual proposal itself. It was the company's requirement to bring forward a proposal, and we were essentially just coming in to give some recommendation and observations regarding it back to the commission.
Yeah, so, well, I can probably do this at the close, but it keeps circling back to I'm trying to find an element where I feel more comfortable with changing.
Sure.
Or trying to say, okay, what is the benefit of any type of change from a rate standpoint? And that's what I'm really struggling with, and I understand what the company is up against from dealing with another legislative body that has issued a renewable mandate that this keeps circling back to. And then down the road, we look back and say, well, now North Dakota ratepayers are compromised from a rate standpoint or paying more because some resources were taken off the table. But it seems like we're already doing that when we're looking at these on an individual basis as they're coming through and saying yes or no, this is good for North Dakota ratepayers, or no, this is not good for North Dakota ratepayers, and it's not approved by the commission. What additional tools do we have going forward where you would say, well, this is advantageous?
Commissioner, I would agree with you that we currently have all the tools we need to do what we need to do. However, empathizing with where I believe the company is, if there will be regulatory misalignment, and so if they are looking and we are looking to enable them to get closer to alignment and more full cost recovery, there will probably need to be some structural changes, and that could be again through a pseudo separation. Maybe, to me, a lot of this is just jurisdictional allocation. But earlier input from the commissioners, whether it be an earlier ADP, I know something that advocacy staff had been batting around for a while is we have these ADPs. They could just as well come and say, I want an advanced determination. This is not prudent. And, of course, by the time they've already made that decision, they've already made that decision on that resource. But if you're not asking for the actual specific resource, they could come in from an integrated resource plan recommendation. They could see how you react to these different resources and ask for a resource to be separated from the system in a pseudo-separation format if needed. Yes, Commissioner.
Which is kind of what they're suggesting anyway.
It's a little bit different structurally, Commissioner, but yeah, in essence, very similar.
Jay?
I've been thinking about this for a long time, but and listening today too for some stuff. First of all, I want to ask about Aurora. I think if I remember right, Aurora came and said, yes, we want this project to go forward, so we'll pay the costs that Minnesota won't pay. Wasn't that how that worked?
Alana, do we have any concerns with talking specific cases? Okay.
So I think that Aurora volunteered to pay those costs, and they did that before you went to Minnesota. And so Minnesota said, we're not paying them if Aurora's paying them.
I wouldn't agree with that at all.
No. Okay, that was my...
And part of that is I negotiated the deal, so...
Okay.
They didn't come to us and say, we'll happily give up some of our margin to move forward with the project.
I thought they wanted it to go forward
bad enough where they reduced the price. They didn't reduce the price. We negotiated that because part of it was that they were worried that we would actually try to pull the contract, and they thought it was worth it to give up some margin so that the project could at least be brought back to Minnesota for a up or down decision. And if it was a down decision, that then they would cover it.
Yeah, what I had heard from the trade journals and so forth was that when it went to Minnesota, Minnesota knew that Aurora would pay it if they didn't.
Minnesota was aware of it because the contract was attached to the filing. Having sat through that commission proceeding and receiving some of the lecturing that I did, that contract was never acknowledged on the record
by the
Minnesota commissioners.
I guess my point being that I don't know that Minnesota has flat out said they're not going to cover the stuff that they required. I mean,
the Minnesota commissioners have spoken as part of the generic docket, the generic inquiry. They have made comments, not through a written order, but they have spoken as individuals on the record that they don't think it's appropriate for Minnesota customers to pay for the costs that are not picked up by the other customers of the integrated system.
I have heard some of that.
And as part of, they will get another opportunity to speak on Aurora as part of the South Dakota share of that, because we will be bringing that back to the Minnesota Commission, and there won't be a contract in place with the developer for the developer to pay for those costs.
Mm-hmm. The other thing that I just wanted to remind is that the traditional regulatory model looks at how much you paid for a resource. If you paid too much for it, they disallow the part that's too much. And that's really where we're at if we don't do anything else. We can do some changes on that and say, well, let's go resource by resource and say, well, solar costs too much generally. And then if that resource is disallowed, you got to worry about what to do with the capacity from it, because whoever does pay for it is really entitled to all of the capacity from it too. And so that leaves us with maybe not a pseudo-separation, but some way to ensure that North Dakota is covering its load plus reserve margin and its capacity. So my thought was you could take the system, the stuff, the pieces that you don't want of the system, like the solar, push that to the side, and then what's left of the system, do a demand allocation on our load plus reserve margin, and if that's like a certain percentage of that we're getting the cost allocation for, then we're fine. We've covered our reserves and our margin. And so there's no need to even worry about us not paying for that resource. But if it turns out that we're short on our reserve margin as our little part of the system, we got like 500 megawatts and we need a 12% reserve margin or something like that. If we're short on it, then we need some kind of a capacity arrangement. And that could be the MISO market. They have a capacity market. And so we would end up getting charged the Zone 1 price for the planning reserve auction clearing.
Is that a question?
It's just
company
a,
or just comment?
It's just a suggestion. I don't know if that's a pseudo separation.
I think, Jerry, you're not very far off ultimately from what we're proposing. The only real difference that we're trying to accomplish here is to say, if on a system basis there's a mandate. Say there's a mandate, so resource X is required to be purchased under a Minnesota mandate. Well, we would size that to serve the entire system. And this, I think, goes to Commissioner Crosius's issue, which is why does Minnesota feel that they can push the mandate towards the company? And I actually don't believe that they do. I think it's the way that the system is managed as an integrated whole that pushes those resources onto North Dakota, and that's what we're trying to mitigate and manage. Because we manage everything on a system-wide integrated basis, if I needed 95 megawatts to meet the obligation in Minnesota, I'd end up having to get 100 so that I can allocate that energy across the entire system. And all we're trying to say is if we have the ability to get only 95 and allocate those costs, the capacity, the energy, the revenues, the whole bundle that comes with that generation to Minnesota, that's what we're trying to accomplish through this concept of pseudo-separation. It's a new rate-making allocation from that perspective. If you're not participating in that resource, you're missing 5 megawatts from what the rest of the system is. And if and when you need that 5 megawatts or 1 megawatt or 2 megawatts, we're proposing that we'd go source that for you from that perspective. I think what's also important to recognize is, as Akash said, the system, 6,500, 7,000 megawatts of the system is going to turn over in the next 20 years. The need of North Dakota that's raised by existing resource retirements is going to be at the same time that the rest of the system has a need too. And so we think that there's going to be or should be opportunities to retain the benefits that North Dakota receives from being part of the integrated system, which is being able to participate in generation much bigger than the load profile would dictate by participating in those kinds of replacements, assuming they're consistent with whatever commission may be sitting here would want at that time.
So another thought I had is, what if our legislature decides that you should get 50% of your load from coal? I mean, are you going to do it?
Well, if the legislature, this is, again, the perfect example.
Yeah.
We'll go find 250 megawatts of coal somewhere, and all we're asking for is the tools to allocate those costs, benefits, and capacity to our North Dakota customers. That's exactly it.
Well, actually, Jerry, though, I think it's something I had written down earlier to follow up on after, but just the question of if federal policy comes down, or even state policy on the North Dakota side. I'm just trying to get my brain wrapped around how complicated that would get in terms of how North Dakota is positioned with so many of these resources being used to meet, say, a Minnesota mandate. I mean, there is a degree of risk. Now, I don't know how likely it is for our legislature to have a formal renewable plan. There's so, But I don't know from the federal side, and it doesn't appear imminent with the current administration, but administrations eventually change.
Commissioner, that's one reason why we were very opposed to the legal separation is for that very reason. A decision like that being would be so drastic, and every other commission after all three of you would have to deal with that, and regardless of the next administration or maybe a change of heart or culture between every different jurisdiction. And the one why we're willing to talk, at least, and look into pseudo-separation is because there is a little more flexibility where you can diverge a ways. And if things change, for example, maybe the next administration comes in, clean power plant's back. Maybe it's even more so towards renewables. At that point in time, we'd be able to actually start to work our way back together, because that's how we would be required to operate. And so, therefore, the next commission wouldn't be necessarily bound by the decisions of this current commission.
Pat or Alana, did you have any questions? Well, we have the company here and advocacy in the room.
Okay.
I'll tell you what, let me just
say. I mean, that, because your last one wasn't really a question. It's
okay. Yeah. Oh, this isn't a question. Well, I guess it is a question. Is how are we going to handle the early retirement of Sherco? And then I'll pass it on.
I was just thinking about all the discussion we've been having. And
wait, no one answered that.
Oh, sorry. Oh, they are going to answer it. Okay.
I think I specifically asked not to talk about that with the company at this hearing.
I just wanted to realize that it's front and center here in these discussions.
As you go forward.
Well, if it's something that shouldn't be discussed because of pending cases, and
but somehow or other, whatever we come up with here needs to probably end up addressing that.
I mean, if memory serves me, there's a settlement agreement in place that talks exactly about how we're dealing with Sherco 1 and 2, doesn't there?
Minnesota, maybe.
Okay. It's the biomass that I'm thinking about.
That's correct.
Biomass, yeah.
Okay. So.
And the question, how would the proposal, your proposal, handle that generation resource issue?
You know, I was asked this question by my client. And the, and the answer really is what the proposal ultimately does is it really tries to look at forward-looking basis resource additions. That's where we've seen the misalignment. With respect to retirements of what's already in rate base, I think rate making has a lot of applications, and that's the more appropriate place to talk about it. Certainly, advocacy staff has sort of let us know that that's probably not going to be a reasonable issue to discuss in this case, and I think we've sort of accepted that.
But to the, I think what, I mean, that lists, that brings up an issue, though, because the early retirement, I mean, the retirement and when it retires dictates when new things are being added, and if there's a disagreement on when something should be retired, it's really part of the resource addition conversation, and I think that's probably what we're facing here.
I will say this, though, Commissioner Fedorchuk, which I think what Zev was trying to get at, which is the retirement side of it. Especially when if you're talking about a retirement that's happening, quote unquote, on schedule. Just let's talk about, for example, the nuclear facilities, because the retirement's going to be contingent upon and subject to our license that we have with the NRC. We can't operate the plant past the NRC license period. So if we don't say the plant retires when the license period hits. At that point, we will have to have made decisions around what we're going to replace it with. I think the question then comes up is around, it actually is about early retirements, and that's
right.
and that, I think what Zev was trying to get to is, from a rate making perspective, all commissions have the opportunity to look at, do I think that the rates will be just and reasonable if I accelerate the book life of a plant to an earlier date if the plant may have life on it. And so at that point, if there's a disagreement about that, we will not recover those costs and rates, and we will bear the consequences associated with that. And I think it's a long way of saying there's a financial stick there if there's a disagreement with an early retirement decision. When it comes to plain retirements, meaning like we've retired the plant, the book life is hit, we're retiring the plant, I think that that's just, it's a added, we're adding resources on a forward-looking basis is what we're doing.
Strangely quiet, Pat.
So, thinking back on how we got to this point in time, we received the filing from Xcel Energy on the resource treatment framework, and in compliance with a settlement and the order adopting the settlement, and staff, advisory staff, was thinking, what do we do next? And the question, we thought at first that what we would do, what seemed right to do, would be to have a hearing. And so we were figuring out what to put in the notice of hearing. What would the issues be? And the issues that we came up with, at least the issues I came up with, was, first of all, at the hearing, we want to hear testimony about should anything be changed at all in the way we regulate the utility and the multi-jurisdictional situation. Second, if we are going to change anything at all, what would we change it to? And when I, you know, when we distributed that notice, that's when a question came up about well, maybe we should have a meeting before we issue that notice and hold a hearing. Maybe we should try to find out what the commissioners have in mind, if they can provide any guidance in that respect. And maybe we should have a hearing or a discussion before that notice goes out anyway to see what the issues should be. And now I'm thinking that I think the company definitely believes there needs to be a change. My question for the company would probably, and probably for advocacy staff, would be the same. I want you to try to get an answer to whatever question it is you had when you came in. And I think the question was, maybe, what do we do next? Do we have a hearing? Is one possibility. Do we wait? Or do you bring it forward at a rate case, all these possibilities, and we talk about them at a rate case. So my question to the company is, what do you think is the next step?
I think at least from my perspective, the next step would be staff has seen our testimony. I think at least from my perspective, I was looking forward to the discussion to see maybe what some of the concerns and the pain points were from the commissioners, so that as we engage in a discussion, which I would like to do with advocacy staff, is to see if we can work out a resolution and then bring something forward. At which point, if there is a resolution, or even if there isn't, I think we would end up at a hearing is where we would end up. I do think that there's some benefits associated with trying to resolve this proceeding. And I think that's what I see as kind of the next steps from my perspective. I don't know if you have anything else.
The only thing I'd add, Pat and the commissioners, is I think there's value in resolving this proceeding in this proceeding rather than going to a rate case. There's a couple of dynamics in a rate case that I think the kinds of decisions and issues that we'd want to work through would have to be accelerated and not necessarily as thoroughly thought through. Number two, you know, the way the company sees it is there's a rate-making solution to be had here, this concept of pseudo-separation, but there's a whole bunch of issues that sort of overlay on top of that resource planning. What would that look like? How would that be? And using this proceeding to do that, we think has tremendous value.
And so what I'm hearing is that your next step would be to continue working with staff, and then at some point in time, bringing something forward to the commissioners, and the commission would eagerly or anxiously wait on what the filing is.
Well, before you get too far ahead, I think part of that has to weigh in our conclusions here at the end.
Okay, sure. And that's true. I mean, the company and the advocacy staff are looking for whatever guidance the commission will provide.
Because I think I know where I'm at now, finally, but I don't know if the other commissioners have other questions.
I have one other one for advocacy now. Does advocacy have a question that they wanted to hear an answer to, or at least a discussion about, before the commission at this meeting?
What we were hoping, like I said in the opening, was to narrow the scope of the proceeding. I guess from the discussion here, I think it sounds like the company is agreeable to, or kind of an understanding, and from the discussion with the commissioners, that legal separation probably isn't the route that we're interested in going. I don't know if you want to say something about that.
Well, I think certainly if we're going to continue to engage in discussions in this docket, or in this case, that it sounds like there's a momentum towards a pseudo-separation type of outcome.
And so I guess if that's agreeable with the commissioners, staff, advocacy staff is not opposed to further discussing that issue. I, again, will have to review it and see if we will come up with a recommendation of whether we believe it's in the public interest and there's a public benefit to doing a pseudo-separation. But there's a lot to explore, as the company has said. I mean, between structural issues as well as possibilities and how this would be administered, and how much advanced review is needed or not needed. So, any feedback would be very much appreciated.
I'm ready, but I'll defer to you since it's primarily your portfolio. If you want to go first.
Yeah. Can I ask a couple questions first? You just said there was a momentum, Zev, toward pseudo-separation. It's not what I was hearing. What I was hearing was the company revising its request to pseudo-separation. Can we say that today and take this legal separation off the table totally? I didn't want to leave the impression that staff and the company are both at, and I'm about to ask him this officially this question, but both advocating pseudo-separation at this point. I want to know if the company can revise to pseudo-separation.
Where I am is, or where the company is that I see that there's a lot of value and a lot of benefit in trying to reach a mutual resolution of this proceeding. And I think that's what Zev's trying to communicate, which is, yes, we filed testimony that continues to support legal separation, and if you look at the weight of testimony that's filed on legal separation compared to pseudo separation, you'll see that there's a lot more discussion on pseudo separation than legal separation. I mean, I view this as, if there is an opportunity to get feedback from the commission for us to come up with a sensible solution, that's the path we're going to take. I'm not going to, like, I don't see a lot of value in trying to take positions that are going to create a lot of animosity on this.
But the company does not want to drop the proposal. It wants something to be done, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And is staff's opinion that something absolutely needs to be done? Or is staff's opinion that if something has to be done, it shouldn't be legal separation, it should be something less? Or I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm just using an example.
I think, as I said earlier, that I believe at this point in time we can continue doing what we're doing. I'm not saying that with further exploring pseudo separation, or maybe even we were discussing the proxy pricing and through other testimony, that there wouldn't be a public benefit to some sort of change as well. I guess that's just something that we need to explore a little further at this point.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have.
You want to go first, or you want to wrap up?
No, I can go first. I think Alana summed it up the same way that I'm looking at it. The hard part for me right now is, while I honestly don't see legal separation being to a North Dakota ratepayer's benefit, I'm also making that as a comparison to doing nothing versus a comparison to pseudo-separation, because I don't have enough on that as a potential option. So I'd like to explore that in more detail. And then I can actually make a fair and reasonable comparison in my own mind, because right now it's really a missing component on how does it all fit together and how do they line up. But just, you know, to be candid about legal separation and looking at how it may box North Dakota ratepayers into some extent, I have significant concerns with that. The other question I have is looking at whatever it is over the long haul, the long term, and what's the long term impact. And again, it all goes back to impact in North Dakota. I can appreciate what you're up against in terms of the renewable mandate that Minnesota has issued, but that's a Minnesota-based decision that again, I still find curious that while the Minnesota regulatory body believes it should be spread across all states, that really isn't relevant, I guess, for this, the matter in terms of how we're looking at it from a North Dakota standpoint. I just look at it from a North Dakota standpoint. So, in short, I need to do more work and ask more questions related to pseudo separation.
I don't know how much money the company has put into this. Just by the pound of the stuff I carried in here, it had to be pretty substantial. I know our staff, which is obviously a small staff, has put a lot of effort into this, and I don't think it was wasted. I learned a lot. I was pretty excited about this a couple years ago, but I have to say, after going through this material, visiting with advisory staff from time to time, I'm far less enthusiastic about making a big change than I ever was in the past. You know, if you look at the country as a whole and just were an outsider from another planet and came in here and listened to the news, you'd swear this is a dreadful country, and any discussion of a wall would be to keep people in, not keep them out. But the fact of the matter is, we've got a pretty good country. And at the same time, in a more local example, yes, I understand some of the dilemmas that the company faces with dealing with these jurisdictional regulators that are different philosophically. I'm frustrated sometimes by the end result. But I don't think that it's as terrible as we're making it out to be. The fact of the matter is, nature and capitalism are pretty good things that sometimes look a little ugly. And we can do a legal separation or a pseudo separation or a partial pseudo separation or a quasi partial pseudo separation, any kind of fancy ideas we want to do, but the fact of the matter is, you're going to be working in multiple jurisdictions with different philosophies. And I thought, Akash, when you were talking about the nuclear plants ending, it made a good example of it. At some point, that's going to happen. Maybe the company and the regulators will get more enthusiastic about nuclear, and it'll be extended for many years to come. But, like I always say with wind turbines, sooner or later, everything will become obsolete and have to close. And so the question is going to be, even under any kind of a separation we might come up with, how's the company going to respond to that? And just using the nuclear plants as the example. If you've got one jurisdiction saying, we want to catch the next fad, you know, let's get rid of this old stuff. We want to do something fancy and new and catch headlines. And the other jurisdiction is saying, nope, this is a great old baseload plant. We need to extend it. Well, what's the company going to do when you're in D.C.? Are you going to be shrugging your shoulders saying, yep, the end is here and we'll satisfy this regulator? Or are you going to exuberantly go and work to try and get that extended? So no matter how you separate this, you're still going to be torn between these jurisdictions. So I really think things are kind of working out all right here. And this kind of competitive philosophy, let's look at the good part of it, too. You know, well, someone else mentioned it first, so another case has already been mentioned. If not for the idea that some other jurisdictions might not accept their share of the cost of some of these things, hard telling how many very expensive PPAs we'd be in here trying to buy out. But the fact that the other jurisdictions might eventually revolt and say no might keep the most progressive jurisdictions from demanding too much. And so at the end of the day, I think that we have the situation where one jurisdiction is demanding something, if the other jurisdiction, where we might have gone wrong, maybe the answer shouldn't be no to a high-cost resource. It should be, you can have recovery up to the going market rate of that power, but not just whatever the extra costs are associated with some new mandate. And like I mentioned or questioned before, if one regulatory body is being ridiculous or unfair, there's still the appeal process. And because I don't think any of our court systems are going to want to see a company end up failing because no one will give them recovery on the mandated costs. I think the system that has worked all these years can continue to work. We just need to continue to do the work that is involved in making it work. But at the end, I will never be opposed to getting new ideas. So if the company has some kind of an idea, I'm willing to listen. But I am just not thinking at this point that we need to push real hard for some big change. I think the tools are there in the current system.
Okay. Well, I'm sort of in the middle. I think that I don't disagree with a lot of what Randy said about there being a lot of tools on the table today. But what I'm hearing is some new realities. There's a lot of change coming because of the aging system. And we all know that the technologies are changing faster than we can even keep up. So all of that combined, to me, points to the need for two things: more planning tools and lots of flexibility. And so I'm very open to the pseudo-separation because I think the name is totally wrong. It seems so extreme. It's a new tool. It's just another tool to add to the mix of things that we can use and can choose not to use. I mean, every time, once you decide what we're doing with the current resources, which we could, you know, there's lots of options on the table for that. We've already made some decisions, like you've said earlier, Jack. I mean, we've worked through a lot of those already, but there's still some to figure out. Going forward, you can choose to say, no, this is never going to be good. That's good up to a certain point, or we'll take our chances. It doesn't look good today, but maybe it's going to pay off in the future. We want to have flexibility. So we'd still have all of those tools at our disposal. It just would provide some more options for certainty for the company, which I think, I mean, yeah, it's great to be sitting in the driver's seat and taking all the good and none of the risk, but we do also have to realize that when the company is having stranded assets and spending a lot of time and money trying to not have stranded assets, that costs our customers too in other ways. Just the time it might cost in the strength of the company in terms of its marketability and its financing. I mean, there's lots of other. So I think we need to be open to providing some additional tools for working through these very real issues moving forward. So I think that I'd like to see conversation between the company. I'd even be open to a hearing on pseudo-separation just to work through all of the various components of it. I mean, it is complicated. There's transmission. How do you deal with that? So anyway, that's where I'm at. Hopefully that provides some clarity. And I also thought the proxy pricing, which wasn't one of the ideas that the company did bring forward, is not all that far off from pseudo separation or what we're doing now. So there might be some additional fleshing out of that concept that could be an additional tool yet, and wouldn't have to just be all or nothing, or just one new thing.
So, if I just ask a quick question, then, commissioners. Okay, I guess then I would just like to have a commission decision to have us either move forward or to do nothing from this point. And I think it sounds like you would like us to proceed and look further into proxy pricing and pseudo separation as options.
Are you asking all
and
of
resource
us
planning
as a commission decision
and more formal resource planning from my list.
More formal resource planning. Okay. And if that's agreeable to the commission or not.
I don't think an informal hearing is where we can really be making a commission decision.
Well, we can provide direction. Oh, you're looking for some form.
It was my understanding, and Alana, correct me if I'm wrong, that based upon any hearing, the commission is able to make a decision.
Well, the commission could provide guidance. I think if you're looking for a motion, and I don't know if you're going that formal, that would be at a meeting, either a special or a regular meeting, and it could come in the form of what type of notice would be issued or that sort of thing. I think maybe it would be appropriate for the commission and advisory staff to talk about what would be the – I think you've all heard what individual commissioners are thinking. I think you've got that kind of useful information today. Sure. As far as a motion might be premature right now, and I think a motion would be appropriate, so either after a work session or on an admin or something like that. Do you have thoughts on that, Pat? If the commission is okay with that or not. I mean, but we would have some kind of a communication between staff and the commission.
Sure. About what I just think that some motion needs to be, you know, pretty well thought out and clarified, because proceeding is one thing, but to what level it's proceeding, I think it will need a little more clarity. Although, like I said, I really think that we need to continue to work hard in the system that we have.
So you guys are looking for whether to have more talks or not. I mean, that's a pretty simple question. Can't we be clear on that? It sounds like we're talking in circles here.
Well, if it's a matter of just needing more time to formulate a motion, we will probably, whether we're going to continue or not, will probably depend on whether the proceeding will continue. And I think that's what the informal was here for today. So if the proceeding is going to continue, which we will know from the motion, even if we informally know that now, we will continue.
Well, if there was a commission decision to close the case,
sure,
it would not continue, but I think you need a formal decision to do any of those things. In the meantime, you have this informal guidance from what you heard today. But until the commission gets to putting it on an admin or deciding to issue a notice or deciding to close the case or whatever, you're just going to be in a little bit of limbo, I think.
Sure.
And it doesn't have to take a long time, but I don't think it can it should happen today because we're not ready for it.
That's fine.
Direction will be forthcoming. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. Well, it's important, though.
I understand you want.
Very important that you are pointed in the right direction, so we're not wasting time going down a path that you find out after you've invested time that, well, we really don't want to quite go down it that way.
Advocacy staff is certainly agreeable to that.
So who's bringing forward the motion? Is that something we do, Alana? I mean, I'm not sure what kind of a motion that is, even though.
I think the commission and advisory staff, if you want us involved, we'll have to sit down and talk for a few minutes about what would be the next appropriate step. I had always envisioned, let me just say, before this started, Pat and I talked, I think Jack was there too. This was never going to substitute for not doing a motion. If you weren't closing the case, like, oh, thank you for your filing, we're not going any further, there would be some kind of formal published notice. The question is, what would it say? So even with this conversation, there's always going to be a notice unless the case was going to be closed. And so that may be the next appropriate step to determine.
And if we do nothing, I guess, if we do nothing, then what happens?
Well, I think nothing at all, like no conversation. Or
no, we had the conversation. If we didn't do a motion at any point, what happens?
Then I think you leave advocacy staff wondering how much time and energy to be putting into this case.
Okay.
Got additions to that?
We'll need to wrap it up with something clear and soon.
So I guess since it's your portfolio, Brian, maybe you should work with the advocacy staff, come up with something, or with staff, come up with something, and then we can entertain it.
We'll come up with something, and then everyone can take a look at it and see if we're on the right track.
I mean, another option is a work session with all the commissioners.
Right.
So if you want Commissioner Crosses to bring forward.
That's a good point. I mean, this doesn't have to take forever to get going in one direction or another, but if we do need to talk about it amongst ourselves more, we could have a work session, and then from that, a motion can be generated off of that discussion, or we could put a motion together, and I'll visit with Pat and Alana, of course we all can,
From my perspective, I'd rather have you just bring forward a motion, and I don't need a work session. But if you want to have one,
I don't think we would need one. So why don't we start that way? Unless Commissioner Crisman uses.
Just for the record, conversations amongst ourselves. We're talking about a public meeting, though, that is noise. I don't want to leave a wrong perception out there. Are there any? So we had no written testimony, I don't believe, but certainly close to a couple hours of oral. Are there any objections to the evidence produced becoming part of the official record? Okay. So the evidence that has been produced will become part of the record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record?
Nothing further.
We are closed. Thank you, everyone.